Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CASA Connection podcast, the podcast where we talk about issues within the world of foster care and how we can continue to educate ourselves and do better for children and youth who are going through the foster care system and the child welfare system. I am Jeff Warren, and we've got a great episode coming your way, a great, great discussion. On our last podcast, it was part one of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we want to provide resources, information, and educational-based topics with regard to sexual assault awareness here in April. And we've got a great discussion coming your way to piggyback off of our last episode. We've got part two here. Let's get to the discussion right now. It is great to have with us this week, coming from Safe and Sound Somerset. I mentioned our part one podcast that we did on Sexual Abuse Awareness Month just a couple of weeks ago with Joelle Piercy. However, this week we have the Vice President of Clinical Services. She is a licensed clinical social worker and a fantastic individual. Can't wait for this conversation. We have Ms. Lauren Leah. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us here on the CASA Connection podcast this week.
Hello. So excited to be here. Looking forward to, you know, sharing all about this really important topic.
Absolutely. It's a very important topic, especially in the world of foster care. And as we continue here within the month of April, we certainly want to highlight why this is such an important issue for us to not only engage in, but to just create more awareness and education as it pertains to sex abuse, because it's something that happens all the time. It happens every day. It happens in every community. This isn't just an urban, quote, issue at all. It's not just a rural issue. It happens in every single community throughout New Jersey, throughout, quite frankly, our nation and the world too. So I was hoping we could get our conversation started off, Lauren, by really talking about why it's important to continue talking about child sex abuse, even though it is uncomfortable. We know that it's not, you know, a happy-go-lucky type of conversation to have with folks, but I think it's important for us to say, look, it's important that we talk about child sex abuse, even though it's uncomfortable. So I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on that? And how can we do a better job of that in general as a community?
Absolutely. That is so well said. It's so important to talk about, right? And there's such a stigma around sexual abuse in general, right? And then when we talk about kids, it makes us very uncomfortable, right? Because we don't want that happening to our children. But talking about it and taking away that stigma and that shame is so crucial to getting the services out there, getting all of the support, but also so that the children can come forward, right? If they, you know, that's a really big part of services education for not just providers like ourselves that we'll talk about and get into, but for parents, teachers, community members, volunteers, to give children the language to know what is happening to them and what does that mean, right? Maybe people think it's normal. Maybe people don't have words to explain, this is what happened to me, or these are the things that I was shown by this other person, that's sexual nature, because this does happen. You know, the statistics show 1 in 5 girls will experience child sexual abuse, 1 in 20 boys, and the most vulnerable times are between the ages of 7 and 13, right? So that's often maybe before puberty happens, before maybe we're thinking about talking about our bodies and sexuality. So this is things, you know, that are important to be aware and bring into the public and take away that shame and stigma.
Absolutely. Great stats there that you were letting our listeners know about. And I don't know if you have any other stats that you may want to get into, because I'd love to hear them. It's an important part of the educational process. And I think another, you know, as you want to get into some more stats here too, I think it's also important to note that there are some children who have been sexually abused within their lives where it's all they know. And mm-hmm. I think that's an important aspect of this as well, that people need to understand. If you are abused in any way, shape, or form, whether it's sexual abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, in whatever case and manner that happens, and if it's something you've always known ever since you were a child, it's not always the easiest thing to deviate away from as you get older. And I think that's an important part of abuse as well. And it's something I just wanted to throw out there to folks, because I hear way too often, not necessarily in the CASA world, But I hear way too often in life, sometimes in the public sector world that I also live and work in, man, why can't kids or why can't adults just walk away from this stuff? Why can't they just, it's just not that easy, folks. If it was that easy, we'd be living in a pretty perfect world, I think, in a lot of different ways. So that being said, I'll stop pontificating right now, and let you, the expert, really speak to this. I don't know if you want to get into any other stats or if you have any thoughts about what I was just
talking
about.
Absolutely. The education is so crucial and so important, right? Because the more that we know, the more that we can see this problem for how it is and not ignore it and address it, right? And what you had shared is really important, right? Because most often that traumas are going to overlap and intersect, right? So if someone is experiencing one type of trauma, they're now more at risk for other types of trauma, right? So maybe if they experience sexual abuse, they're more likely to experience that again, either repeatedly from another person,
yep,
in their childhood, in their adolescence, in their adulthood, right? For all of the reasons that we spoke about, right? Because it's normalized, because maybe people think that's what they deserve without the treatment, right? That hopefully what they're going for that we'll get to. But also that trauma really compounds, right? We're talking about things like, you know, the foster care community, right? Often they come from trauma, right? And now more at risk for additional traumas. Another part that's sometimes hard for people to wrap their minds around is that most often this occurs to children who, and their sexual abuse by people that they know. People that they trust,
yes,
right? So that we, you know, if we think that this is the stranger that jumps out of the bushes, right? Or that does this, that's very unlikely. They don't have access. They don't have the trust of the child. And often that really builds and happens over time. So that's usually more of what that looks like. And, you know, all of other types, like we mentioned, all other types of trauma intersect with that, including exposure to domestic violence or being in a home with domestic violence. So there's, a lot of different pieces that intersect, too. So, yes, of course, we're focusing on sexual abuse today, but knowing that other traumas compound and overlap. And like we said, like knowing that this happens everywhere. This is not one particular race. This is not one particular socioeconomic status or area of the country, the world, you know, that this is things that people are genuinely going through.
Absolutely. And as we're moving along with our conversation here, Lauren, I think it's important for us to focus on child sex abuse and what it looks like for the youngest victims, like what it actually looks like for them. Because perpetrators, from my understanding, you are the licensed clinical social worker who is a lot more well-versed and educated in this realm than I am, but the cyclical aspect of what child abuse and sexual abuse really comes down to, again, you mentioned it just a couple minutes ago, which was, you know, people who have been abused themselves. There is a cyclical and cycle to this that I think we all need to not only understand, but how we work to understand the child's point of view, what they need inevitably, and how we end up trying to curb this, how we can, I don't know if it's necessarily ever going to be broken. We always say we want to break the cycle. I don't know necessarily as a man in my mid 40s here, I kind of feel like, okay, if we can curb, let's continue to curb, you chip away at it. How do we do that? And because of how this looks like for our youngest victims and what can we do as we're moving forward here?
Absolutely. So really good point that you bring, right? To know what the signs are and what to expect, right? Because yes, absolutely. We're going to talk about hope and healing and resilience. But kids are really impacted by these things, right? And you know, they often have behavioral problems or acting out in school and at home, right? So we take the approach of, if something's going on, what else is there, right? And staying, thinking of the possibility that this could be child sexual abuse, right? There's a lot of emotional aspects, right? Maybe there's a lot of anger, both externalized, but also internalized, because that happens a lot, right? You know, we tend to have Two sides of the spectrum, right? Those who are going to do a lot of outward behaviors, and those are going to have a lot of inward behaviors. So those are things like anxiety, depression, PTSD, and trauma symptoms, because kids do develop that, right? They have these traumatic symptoms. They have difficulty sleeping, right? And concentrating at school, and in all the things that they're doing. And they have a lot of challenges socially, right? Maybe it's hard to connect, right? Maybe they're so worried about, will I say something to somebody? The person who was hurting me and abusing me said, if I tell anybody, they're going to hurt my parents or something bad is going to happen. So they really withdraw. It's hard to connect to other people. So there's a lot of challenges there. So I think knowing that there's not a one size fits all of a person who causes harm, right? We can't look at a person and say that's somebody who's going to hurt someone else or hurt a child. But also in the same vein, it really does present differently with kids, right? And often sometimes it's the per sometimes it's the person you wouldn't expect. So really listening and encouraging children to come forth. That's one of the biggest things that I share with people of like, believe kids. I know that last week that's something that was shared, right? Of believing what we are told, right? Even if it's not something we want to hear or want to believe, but to say like, okay, they said that they are hurting. We need to take the next step and see what's really going on.
I think that's such an important point. Believing kids when they tell you something. I know we live in a world where there are a lot of kids, and I have two teenage daughters that are 13 years old. They're twins. And, they're going through a certain stage in their life with their friends. And there's a lot of stories that are told. There's a lot of instances where you are stepping back and saying, oh my gosh, should I believe this story? Should I not believe this story? Now, I'm not saying from a sexual abuse perspective, but when it does come to sexual abuse, it's something that's very serious. And I think that individuals need to take a step back and say, okay, this may be a kid with some behavioral problems, and then maybe they've made up some stories here or there. But when you're talking about sexual abuse, I don't believe it's something, this is just my personal feeling, don't necessarily believe it's something that even a youth is going to put out there and say, yes, this happened to me. For fear of embarrassment, for fear of how they will be viewed with their other peers or even with other adults. So at the end of the day, I think it's very important, like you said, that we do believe children, believe them, talk to them, hear them when they come to you and say something. And I'm wondering, like, what other type of, red flags in a way should we really be looking for when it comes to sex abuse? I mean, because it takes a lot for a child to actually come to an adult to say, yes, I've been sexually abused. So with that being said, like, what are some red flags? I mean, I know you kind of went through a few, just a couple minutes ago, but are there any specific red flags that we should all be looking for within the course of our lives, whether it's with family members, close friends, people in the community as well, that we can say, okay, well, this is a little bizarre. What's happening here? What are your thoughts here?
Absolutely. So definitely want to highlight what I had said previously, because that's, that's typical trauma symptoms. I think some other things to think about is when there are really big changes all of a sudden, right? Maybe, a teenager was very outgoing, right? And all of a sudden they aren't now. We want to think about and ask questions of like, what's going on? Maybe not chalk it up to hormones or this or that happening. Another really big part, especially that's with child sexual abuse and trauma, is behaviors that don't really match the age range, right? So if that could be viewing sexual images or pornography, much younger, right? Or engaging in certain behaviors that are outside the typical age range, because then it makes you think about how do they know that? How are they aware that that was happening? So those are really things that make you think. And then health problems that aren't typical of someone that age, right? So if someone has maybe symptoms of a sexually transmitted infection, right? Or bruises on their private parts or certain marks that just don't make a lot of sense. So that's a good example for, to go to healthcare professionals to share your concerns. And I think that's a really big part of that as well. Sometimes people think that they have to know for 100% before they do or they say anything. But It's really seeing the signs, bringing concerns, maybe like asking the child or the teen of what's going on, and then working to say, these are my concerns with, and get the other professionals involved. Because the best case scenario in that situation is that that child or teen did not experience that. That would be the best case scenario.
Absolutely.
Because then if you didn't, if we're not doing those things, then we're missing so much, or we're not offering the support when someone does tell in their own way.
My follow-up to that is, how do we then get the professionals involved as well? Because hypothetically speaking, say there are a bunch of 10-year-old boys who are on their devices and they are sharing some very explicit-based material about themselves, and it gets around within groups and within various families, and there's a concern. And there's a concern with somebody who's a parent that says, I can't believe my son or daughter just received this from this individual. They're way too young to be doing this or engaging in this type of practice. Like, where does somebody then go from there? Once the concern is there, once they've seen that red flag, where do they then go from there? What's appropriate?
Absolutely. So there are some options depending on where this is happening. So, and a lot of it, what you just mentioned is like there needs to be an element of education as well of what's safe and what's okay and what's appropriate. So in certain cases, if that's happening within the school and a group at school, you know, it's helpful to go to the school to talk about these things, figure out what's going on. Well, and her team are really working to arm the schools with a lot of education and knowledge about that. If you're worried about physical health and concern, you know, going to a pediatrician is really helpful. There's other systems, you know, emergency systems, right? Like the Division of Child Protection Permanency. And then there's the, you know, the healing and the emotional health as well. So like, you know, safe and sound and counseling services, depending on, you know, if you're in our county, you know, I know some people listen elsewhere too, but knowing what those services are, because there are designated services for children who have experienced sexual abuse and abuse overall, and the services are out there. So if you don't know where to start, calling those hotlines, calling our hotline and saying, this is what is happening. What can I do next? And exploring that. And then, you know, then addressing that in the moment and then really working towards the healing, the safety, the education, because that's really the focus so much of our work, because there's so much, you know, hurt and pain from this, but also wanting to instill that hope, that healing, that's possible, right? This is not a sentence of like, this is what the rest of your life needs to look like if you've experienced this.
I love how you ended that part of the discussion right there. I really did, because there is hope. There is hope for children who have gone through sexual abuse or quite frankly, any type of abuse. There is hope, folks. And as we end our conversation here, Lauren, I would really love to hear about some of these resources at Safe and Sound Somerset, some of the programming that you have been engaged in that can really help folks in our local community. And as I mentioned, Joelle Piercy, she was on our part one episode, folks. I would highly recommend you go back on our podcast feed, listen to that podcast as well, because it segued fantastically into this discussion. And again, the end of our conversation here, Lauren, as to how can folks get better based on the resources that are available. So, what are some of those resources through Safe and Sound Somerset?
Absolutely. So Safe and Sound offers, you know, resources that are really holistic for the whole family. So I am going to highlight our services for youth and teens, but knowing that like when the family is healing, that's what helps. Like all the research shows that having one safe, trusted adult, especially if they're a caregiver, is really the most crucial for having those positive outcomes and those protective factors. So in all of those situations, I know for, you know, that could be a foster parent, that could be a biological parent, that could be a teacher. So that makes all the difference. So we, of course, will be, you know, caring for and healing with children, but also really engaging with their safe caregiver. So our services, our counseling services are so crucial. So we really focus on, you know, educating, right, about what this is and what you've been through, right, in establishing that safety, right? Both talking about that with the youth, but also the caregiver. There's such an important piece of that, right? A 5-year-old, can come
Yep.
to us, and they need the support to make sure they're safe, to see all
Absolutely.
those things happen. Skills to cope, skills to understand their feelings, and then the ability to work through that trauma. So we use a really strong evidence-based treatment actually developed for children who have experienced child sexual abuse called trauma-focused CBT. And we use that is that it's so helpful. It includes the entire family, the caregiver, but also that it just shows really high rates of improvement overall, right? Reduction of the symptoms,
Great. Yeah.
taking away the positives of working through that, the hope for the future moving forward. So it shows an 80% success rate in reduction of PTSD versus about like 50% from other
That's
types of
fantastic.
non-directive
Yeah.
treatments. Absolutely, and not meeting those criteria for PTSD anymore. So that's an amazing treatment that we have been using. We are certified for that. We work with one of the developers for that at the CARES Institute. So our team is certified and knowledgeable in all of those things. We also offer our therapy for children as well, because we want to make sure that every avenue can be explored, right? Sometimes that's a much safer option to express in that way. So really want to offer what is best for that family at the time. So that's really the focus of what our services are, right? That everybody does really hard work when they come to us, but with that, it's amazing results. And the team provides that empathy, that care, and also that skill to know that this is where, the child, the adolescent that we're working with is going to be above and beyond and working to really break that cycle.
We are so very grateful to Safe and Sound Somerset with all the work that you have done in the community, the awareness that you have brought not only to Somerset County, but surrounding counties and communities. Thank you for being such a great, great partner. And again, folks, Lauren Leah, Vice President of Clinical Services at Safe and Sound Somerset. And I loved the conversation with you here on our CASA Connection podcast, Lauren. And, please give our best to Joelle as well. You are all, again, doing such great work. Where can folks find you online on the interwebs if they want to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here today. So you can find us at safe-sound.org, or you can type Safe and Sound Somerset into Google. We're also on all different social media platforms. So you have a lot of different ways to interact with us, learn from us, see all the things that are going on. So thank you.
Such great information from Lauren during that discussion. And folks, we have resources here. We have the resources right in our backyards, and a lot of other communities across New Jersey and across the country do have these resources as well to utilize. When it comes to us talking about this, we need to just not only continue to talk about sexual abuse and sexual assault awareness here in April, since it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month here in April, but throughout all months of the year. Let's continue talking about this and educating folks within our communities. Nobody should feel shame because of this. And yes, while we mentioned during our conversation, there may be uncomfortable discussions, with family members or friends, it's necessary, because at the end of the day, there's hope. There's a way to heal. And Safe and Sound Somerset and Lauren and Joelle and the great staff that they have there, they are there to help. So we hope you enjoyed and got something beneficial out of this CASA Connection podcast. I'm sure that you did, because there was a lot of great stuff that Lauren was talking about. Feel free to follow us on the social media sites out there. We are on Facebook. You can follow us on there or like our page if you haven't already, facebook.com/CasaShaw. We are on Instagram as well, instagram.com, or why don't you just go to the app? How about that? You go to the app and you just put in Casa_Shaw. You're going to find us there. And our website is casashaw.org. We'd love for you to head on over to our website. Check out our resources that we have too. We have a video series, a family video series. In fact, Joelle from our last podcast episode was within that family video series talking about healthy relationships. She did a fantastic job with that. We've got a lot of other great resources over at casashaw.org. So you all take care. We will see you for the next CASA Connection podcast, or I should say you'll be listening to us, hopefully, on the next CASA Connection podcast. Share our episodes. Share this podcast platform with folks that you believe would benefit from listening to it. We appreciate you. Take care. We'll catch you on the next Casa Connection podcast.